This week off the cushion with Danny Fisher. With only days to go before the 2014 U.S. midterm elections, we are joined by two active candidates, one a devoted Buddhist and the other with a background in the academic study of the religion. First, New Hampshire's Suzanne Harvey, who was Nashua's Ward 2 Democratic State Representative from 2005 to 2010, shares how her Tara practice influenced her to seek that seat again.
She has that one foot off the lotus, ready to help wherever help is needed. And that, I kept looking at that every day and thinking, I can do this. I was like the little engine that could. I can do this. I can do this. And I just had to cross that finish line that made me say, yes, I'm going to file to be a candidate.
Second, Garden Grove, California mayoral candidate Bao Nguyen talks about how his master's degree in Indo-Tibetan Buddhist studies informs his work as a community leader.
I think it just deepens my faith in what I do, and also my faith in people and the ability of people to work together for a better society. I think that we can work on it. I think it's a genuine possibility, like the Dalai Lama has said.
Welcome. Back in 2009, I wrote a piece for the website Religion Dispatches entitled, No Buddhists in Washington? I said the following. The Religious Literacy Dictionary, in Stephen Prothero's 2007 bestseller, Religious Literacy, devotes less than 2 pages to Buddhism, but spends 7 lines making the point that, quote, Buddhists have not been particularly active in American politics, end of quote. This notion, accurate or not, is probably the perception of most Americans, many of whom have little real awareness of the 2,500-year-old tradition to begin with. It may also explain why President Obama's 25-member Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships currently lacks a Buddhist representative, despite the presence of at least one appointee from the other 4 major world religions. In the time since both Prothero and I wrote our pieces, a lot has changed. For one thing, President Obama made that historic first-ever appointment of a Buddhist to the Advisory Council of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. In 2012, he called up Venerable Miao Hong, the Foguanshan nun who, among other things, serves as the Buddha's Light International Association's representative to the United Nations. In addition, 3 Buddhists, Maisie Hirono and Colleen Hanabusa of Hawaii and Hank Johnson of Georgia, have been elected to the U.S. House of Representatives since 2007. With Representative Hanabusa's election in 2010, Hawaii became the only state with a majority non-Christian House delegation. Here's Amy Goodman speaking with her during an episode of Democracy Now! That aired this past June. They were discussing an amendment to the House Defense Appropriations Act proposed by Representative Hanabusa that would prevent the president from circumventing the War Powers Resolution to unilaterally commit U.S. forces to operations in Iraq. It passed in the House without opposition.
You're one of the few Buddhists in Congress. Your colleague, Senator Maisie Hirono, also a Buddhist from Hawaii, Hank Johnson of Georgia.
That's right.
Does that play into your feelings in any way?
You know, I don't believe that it necessarily plays into my feelings per se, but, you know, I've always been, as being raised as a Buddhist, I've always felt that it's really a philosophical way of looking at what goes on in our lives and how do we place that balance. So in the sense that I'm always asking the questions of why and how does this affect the people, what are my constituents, and I guess in that sense, yes, it's really sensitizes me to the really major question of what is it? You know, we are talking about human lives, but I think that the bottom line in all of this, it isn't necessarily religious oriented. I think it really is a matter of just humanitarian concerns and people and the question of what is it that we, as Americans, intend to tell the world as we step in the middle of a sectarian civil war that we know has been going on for a while? So what is it that triggers it this time?
In 2012, Maisie Hirono became the first Buddhist elected to the U.S. Senate, as well as the first Asian-American woman and the first Japanese-born citizen elected to the Senate. The influence of Buddhist teachings and Buddhist figures on the American political landscape seems to have increased as well. There have been a few high-profile politicians, such as California Governor Jerry Brown or New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, with a history of studying and/or practicing Buddhist meditation. Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, in particular, has been very active in the movement promoting the benefits of mindfulness. Here he is speaking at an event at the Omega Institute in 2012.
What are we talking about here? What are we asking people to do? Slow down? Boy, there's a risky proposition for us. Have you met anyone in the country that doesn't want to slow down just a little bit? You know, not get too caught up in the past or fantasize too much about the future? We want you to be present in the present moment. That's something that we all should be able to agree on. And in a political culture where we're trying to find some one or two, God help us please, at least things that we all can agree on as Americans. And I believe that this is it.
Even some of the most hallowed corridors in government have begun to give the floor over to Buddhist leaders to share their wisdom, as the U.S. Senate did this past March when they invited a certain monk to speak to them for the very first time.
The Senate will be in order. The opening prayer will be offered by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama.
This is my favorite prayer. Daily, I pray this. That gives me inner strength. So enthusiasm to serve sentient being, a humanity on this one. As long as space remains, and as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and help dispel the misery of the world. Thank you.
Before long, there may be more to report in terms of Buddhist participation in American politics. On November 4th, only about 40% of Americans eligible to vote will go to the polls to cast their ballots in the United States' 2014 midterm elections. This is surprising when you consider the stakes. Every member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election, and there are also 36 gubernatorial elections and 36 Senate elections taking place. Among other things, voters will also decide on many mayors and local officials, as well as policies and initiatives. Those Senate races are being closely watched this time around, as vaunted statistician Nate Silver has predicted at his 538 blog that Republicans have a 62.8% chance of winning the majority. Mashable writer Colin De Leda helpfully translates what this would mean. He writes, quote, "Since the GOP already controls the House of Representatives, Republican control of the Senate would make it virtually impossible for President Obama to push any contentious issues through Congress." And let's look to the future a bit. A Republican Senate would better be positioned to wipe away regulations on carbon emissions. They could do this by tying government funding with legislation that restricts the power of the Environmental Protection Agency, possibly forcing Obama to approve restrictions or appear as though he is the cause of yet another potential government shutdown. Obama would also probably be able to appoint far fewer justices around the nation, as judges require a simple Senate majority for approval. Another thing to keep in mind, more Republican senators now means that whoever is elected in November will be around for 6 years, including the entirety of the next president's first term. The end of quote. You can find links to this article, the full versions of the clips you've heard, and other resources at dannyfisher.org. Though it would be difficult to determine how many new candidates with a Buddhist or Buddhist studies background are seeking office this time around, we know about two. First, the practitioner.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Harvey. I'm calling from Nashua, New Hampshire, and I am running for state representative in Nashua, and that means I would be, if I win, one of 400 members of our very unique House of Representatives in the state. I have already served 3 terms, haven't been there in 4 years, and decided to run again.
Suzanne, would you tell us about the issues that are most important to you?
In New Hampshire, because there's 400 members of the House, we have sort of a prescribed number of voters that we're responsible for. And in my district, there's about 5,000 voters. And from whether they're Republicans, Democrats, or independents registered that way. And I think in New Hampshire, you know, some of the main issues that they care about in general, it is a gun state. It's an open carry state. And guns are always a big issue beyond just hunting, as it is in Vermont, which is has a very good safety record. So guns, the right to work legislation is always important to people here, not to Democrats, but mostly to Republicans. I am a Democrat, and you know, I and many of my colleagues just don't think that's a good piece of legislation for this state. In the past, when I served those 6 years, for four of those years, I was vice chair of the Science, Technology, and Energy Committee. And when I was there, renewable energy became a really important issue for me, and it still is. And I'd like to go back and do more work on that. I was the prime sponsor of the Renewable Energy Act, which is the RPS for New Hampshire. A renewable portfolio standard, and it really is a way that the state can enhance its percentage of renewable energy compared to coal or anything else that's not clean. Anything with energy is really important to me. But I'm also separate from politics on the board of the New Hampshire Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and as such, anything that has to do with domestic violence issues is important to me, too. So I will certainly be vocal on those issues. And also children. Anything to do with children is very important to me. Children are our future. We need to be good ancestors in terms of the earth and take care of it for the children to come. And we also need to make sure they're fed and ready to go to school and have a good education, and that there's an equality about not only quality but equality that has to do with public education that's very important to me.
Anything you'd care to share with us about how your race is going now?
I've been knocking on a lot of doors, and some people are home, some people aren't. Weekends are best, but I'm finding a lot of hospitality, a lot of supporters from the past who have been with me in every election, and are ecstatic that I'm running again. I did very well fundraising, better than ever. And so I can't predict anything because I can't predict where New Hampshire is right now. And I know that historically, Republicans come out and vote. The far right, not just your moderate Republicans, but the far right is always very jazzed about voting, and they come out. And sometimes we really have to push the get out the vote efforts with Democrats, just to remind them in a non-presidential year how important it still is. And my mantra, my motto for every campaign has been, and the name of our capital where the state house is Concord. So I've always said that what the decisions made in Concord are more affect our daily lives more than the decisions made in Washington, D.C. And I truly believe that about every state, that what happens in your state house affects your daily life a lot.
You wrote for Shambhala Sun last year about how you didn't take refuge vows and formally become a Buddhist until after you ended your previous run as a state representative. Are things different this time around now that you're a card-carrying Buddhist?
No, it's different in one particular sense. Although I never did like negative campaigning, and I don't think I've ever done negative campaigning in terms of saying things or publishing things against my opponent or opponents. We have three seats in our district, so I just need to win one seat. So we've got three Democrats running and three Republicans running for three seats. And so I could run against any one of them vocally, That's never been my style, but it's not the specific people, it's the far right agenda that is so really anathema to me, and it really goes against my values. And it would be so easy to run against that rather than say, this is what I stand for. And I just can't go down that route. And it's even more, if anyone wants to do it, this is the year to do it for that negative campaigning, because the former Tea Party Speaker of the House is saying he wants to be Speaker again. And it would be very easy to run against him and his minions. But it's something I feel, I think as a Buddhist, I feel very uncomfortable about doing that. It just doesn't sit well with me. So I am just talking about what I believe in, what I care about, my issues, and so be it. You know, that's, it's different in that it's not that I ever did any negative campaigning, but I'm more aware of it now. I'm more aware, the Buddhism has become more embodied in me, I think, and I just can't go down that route. As effective as it might be for undeclared voters, not necessarily Democrats, but for undeclared voters.
So how did you decide to run again, Suzanne?
It was actually quite a long process. It was not obvious to me to run, except one of our Democratic representatives decided not to run again, so there was an opening spot for me to say, sure, I'll run. But I had a lot of misgivings. One was because guns are allowed in the state house. They've been in the state house for a long time, but the tone of the state house is different. The people who are quote unquote pro-gun are pretty adamant about keeping their guns with them, not only in committee rooms, but also in the general session where we have our Wednesday, all 400 of us get together and we vote on the bills. So that bothered me a lot. I wasn't necessarily having fear for myself. I just thought, do I really want to be in that atmosphere? Do I really want to put myself in the middle of that, where already one young legislator who always packs his gun dropped his gun, it wasn't correctly put in his holster, in committee room. And, you know, thank goodness it didn't go off. But it's like an accident waiting to happen. And we also have fourth graders coming in. That's their class trip from around the state. Every week, they have a tour around the state house. They meet the governor. And I was very uncomfortable about that. Plus, the absolute, I mean, it's no different than Washington, the absolute schism between the two parties and how different we approach things. And when I was there 4 years ago, it wasn't quite like that. The Tea Party hadn't, they didn't really come in until 2010 when I lost my election by 5 votes. And I spent a lot of time at my shrine on my cushion with my beautiful Tara statue, with the translation by my teacher, Lama Willa Miller, of the 21 Praises of Tara. And it's a wonderful translation. And I had my Tara statue there. So one of the things that, or several of the things that resonated with me in the translation were things like Tara's fearlessness in the force of in the face of challenge, her compassion, her freeing of distress, her being the earth's defender, which really resonated in terms of the past legislative history of mine, Particularly, I liked her stomping on the macrocosm and how she has that one foot off the lotus, ready to help wherever help is needed. And that, I kept looking at that every day and thinking, I can do this. I was like the little engine that could. I can do this. I can do this. And I just had to cross that finish line that made me say, yes, I'm going to file to be a candidate. And I really, like I said, I struggled with it. And the translation always also says, Tara stands up to oppression. She stops injustice. And these are the things that are important to me. And as I was reading this every day on my cushion, reciting the 21 praises, I kind of took Tara inside of me and looked for what was inside of me that was like what I was reading. And I knew it was there. I just needed them to come to the surface so that I could come to the point in early June by the deadline for saying, yes, I'm going to run. I'm going to go file down at City Hall. And then it happened. And one of the things that stayed with me was when I did talk to Lama Willa, my teacher, several months before all this, about running. She said to me, you know, everything changes when there's a practitioner in the room. And that just stayed with me over and over again in my head. I don't think I'm the great white nitrous that's going to ride into the state house and save everything by any means, but just hoping to have a sense of equanimity in my seat, both in committee and in session, maybe at the well when I give speeches in front of all my colleagues, and have a sense that, you know, we're all in this together. And, you know, forget the right, forget the left. You know, this is New Hampshire, this is the Granite State, let's get it done, that kind of thing. And so, you know, I'm hoping to win. I think it would be very interesting and very different from my past three terms, just in this one aspect. And whatever will be, will be.
Thank you, Suzanne. Are there any parting thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
Civic involvement is super important and is very, not only challenging, but what's the word I want? It's it really gives back in ways we can't even imagine to ourselves. And so I think it's very worthwhile to do on any level, whether it's, you know, mayor, state level, or local committees, or, you know, running on the library board, whatever. Just participating is important. And that has, you know, nothing to do specifically with Buddhism, but I think at Buddhists, we do bring a lot to the table, whether it's just our own, you know, if we could just center ourselves and be present. You know, in our Sangha, we make a priority of deep listening. And I think that when you keep that in mind, that when you're with someone, you're talking to someone, whether I'm talking to a voter, potentially someone who could vote for me, or in any situation, in a meeting, at the grocery store, whatever, that listening to someone else is, you know, without trying to plan what you're going to say next, and just deep listening is more valuable than we could imagine. And I think as Buddhists, that's something that we do practice, and for good reason. There's not enough of that. Certainly not enough in politics. Certainly not enough. But I think that if each of us brings that to the public sphere, we'll change the conversation. We really will. Because it's not just listening with the idea of what you're going to say next. It's really hearing the other person. And that's going to make a big difference.
Next, we're joined by a candidate who I first got to know as a colleague in graduate school at Naropa University, then again as a neighbor during my time in Southern California.
I'm Trustee Bao Nguyen, currently a member of the Garden Grove Unified School District Board of Education, and I'm a candidate for mayor of Garden Grove.
Bao, what can you tell us about Garden Grove?
It has the population of 175,000 people. So it's fairly large. It's very diverse. It's about a third Asian American, a third Latino, and a third Anglo or Caucasian. It has an industrial park. It also has the largest number of Asian American owned businesses in Orange County. That's 8,800 Asian American owned businesses. And it also has a tourist sector, a tourism industry, where we take advantage of the Disneyland tourists and have folks that come visit stay in our hotels. Garden Grove is very religiously diverse. Garden Grove has Friends or Quakers. It also has Lutherans, Episcopalians, United Methodists, Catholics, and Buddhists of various different sectors. And it also has one of the largest mosques in the region as well. As a member of the Orange Diocese Commission on Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the Roman Catholic Church, we bring different religious traditions and faith traditions together to promote harmony and understanding and to work on issues that we care about together. Last year, we had the United Methodist Bishop, Bishop Minerva Carcano, and also our Bishop, Kevin Vann, together for a ceremony and to share our thoughts on immigration and the work that we do on immigration reform.
Would you tell us about the issues that are important to you?
Currently, Garden Grove is faced with an issue called graying. Another way of putting that is that there are more funerals than there are baptisms, so to speak, and our pews are thinning in our churches. And that's due in part to what's evidenced by the U.S. Census data. Late 20s, 30s, and 40s have been leaving Garden Grove, and I believe that's due to a lack of opportunity, a lack of job opportunities, and with the city currently focusing its economy primarily on hotels and tourism, that's only a small sector. And I'd like to see our city take stock of our assets and our talents, and really, it's the youth. And we've invested in our kids' future and their success for so many years through public education, from pre-K through 12, that's at least 13 years. And if they go to college, that's 17 or more in terms of graduate school, possibly 19 or more years. And when they return, they should be able to have an opportunity to give back to Garden Grove. And I like to see our local commercial infrastructure developed in a way where we begin looking at technology and looking at technology fields. Currently, as a trustee on the Garden Grove Unified School District Board of Education, which is the 11th largest school district in California, we have successfully taken public investment of a Measure A bond, which is $250 million, and we more than doubled that with state matching funds because we got in line and we were able to maneuver the political environment just right. And we more than doubled that. So we have over $500 million. And we also leveraged the E-rate funding, which is the small tax on your telephone or communications bill. And we have begun laying fiber optic cables throughout our school district. And I'm proud to say that we will be the school district in the region with the fastest internet for our students. That's delivering 40 gigabytes per second into each school site. So I like to really build upon that and see how we can develop fiber optic networks further in our city, especially in our industrial park, to create a tech economy, moving Garden Grove from what it's known as in the past as Garbage Grove to Silicon Grove. And I think that's really key so that we take advantage of the talents that we've cultivated, homegrown talent in our schools, to make sure they have the opportunities here in Garden Grove to thrive and to raise their own families so that they don't have to move out, so that when they have kids, their kids won't be far from their grandparents. The grandparents can see their grandkids, you know, so that we maintain those family ties in our community.
So how's your race going, Bao? I've seen a good bit about it in the Southern California news.
My race is really exciting. It's really dynamic. We're walking every day. I have the firefighters endorsement, and they're walking precincts for me as well. I'm endorsed by the Orange County Register, which many folks are saying Orange County is changing. If the Orange County Register endorsed you, Bell, then Orange County is changing. And that puts a smile to my face when I hear folks, you know, so optimistic and really on board with the message that I'm bringing to the community, not only to Garden Grove, but to Orange County. So I'm really excited about that. I'm also out there on television and radio and making sure that voters understand that this is an important election for our community, because local elections have a pretty big impact upon the day-to-day lives of residents in the city. So, you know, I don't want to talk so much about my opponent, but he's been in office for 20 years and he has a scandal that's wrapped around him right now. And there's been an investigation. And you can read about it in a newspaper. And the investigation, in my opinion, actually further implicates him in nepotism and corruption in our city hall. So I'm running to not only build upon the assets of our youth and of our community to build a strong local economy, but also to clean up city hall and to restore trust and integrity to city hall.
Would you say a little bit about your background in Buddhist studies? As a politician, do you find yourself drawing on the things we learned? How has your graduate study of Buddhism served you or not?
I'm very inspired by Buddhist teachings. I have a quote here right in front of me with the Dalai Lama staring at me. And it says, given human beings' love for truth, justice, peace, and freedom, creating a better, more compassionate world is a genuine possibility. So I believe in the possibility of people, and I think this is universal, that we seek understanding and that we listen. And that's what elected officials, especially at the local level, are supposed to be doing. And that's what I offer. I'm definitely inspired by Buddhist teachings, and learning about Buddhism has deepened my own understanding of compassion and in terms of my tradition and where I come from, being raised Catholic and very proud of who my patron saint is. My patron saint is San Martin de Porres. He's from Peru. He's the patron saint of social justice and of poverty. So I think it just deepens my faith in what I do, and also my faith in people and the ability of people to work together for a better society. I think that We can work on it. I think it's a genuine possibility, like the Dalai Lama has said. Buddhist practice is really important, especially for someone like myself that's engaged with so many different perspectives and such a diverse community. And really, it's not necessarily because I'm learning something about Buddhism to apply to others, but really to apply to myself. I find that because I'm confronted with so many challenges on a daily basis, that reminding myself, you know, to breathe and to be present and to be patient with myself is also a journey. Because I can't imagine not having the Buddhist foundation that I've had, you know, with my education at Naropa University to be able to succeed and to be able to maneuver through these very complex and oftentimes challenging environments that I'm in.
Bao, at the risk of putting you on the spot, I remember when we were students together that you had a particular fondness for and fascination with one famous Mahayana sutra.
Yeah, you know, I reflect a lot upon the teachings of Vimalakirti. He's been everything, you know. He's a jack of all trades, and he's a lay person. He's an ordinary human being, just like you and I. And his teachings were really about how we move beyond our concepts to a place where we're in a space that's really of non-judgment. There's a concept in that sutra that's Anuttapatika Dharma Kshanti. And according to Dr. Judith Simmer Brown's translation, joyful patience with ambiguity, I think that's really key. Because in a political dynamic world that we live in, and working with so many different perspectives as an elected official, as a politician, it's really important for me to practice patience with ambiguity, because I don't want to judge people. I think that prevents me from experiencing reality, but it also prevents me from being able to solve problems and being able to engage people across differences, across different perspectives. So that kind of directing my curiosity into ambiguity and trying to find out with a sense of joy, with a sense of hope that we can work together, that we can create something that is harmonious, is really inspiring. And I take inspiration from the Vimalakirti Sutra, especially the translation by Dr. Thurman.
Thank you, Bao. That's our show. Be sure to check out DannyFisher.org for this week's episode extras. We wish Suzanne and Bao good luck in the upcoming midterm elections, and we'll be back next Sunday with an all-new episode. Thanks for listening.